Nobody's been more accurate at predicting the fall of the vaccine, the disaster, the lack of transmission. We predicted it the day it was being released to humanity. And we've been right. How are we right? Because it wasn't just the COVID vaccine investigation. It was the vaccine of how all these vaccines were being tested and put onto the market. Well, one of the conversations we had very early on, as the trials were beginning, before this vaccine was even out of trials, as it was entering the trials, remember, we threatened a lawsuit against the FDA during the Moderna and Pfizer trials because they weren't going to have a saline placebo group. And we wrote a letter saying, if you don't bring a saline placebo into those trials, we're going to cry fraud and say you didn't do a proper safety trial. Within 7 days, they changed their program and added the saline placebo. Now, that would have been great until the EUA came along just weeks later and essentially erased the trial and put the vaccine out without being properly tested to the world. Well, I want to look at one specific part of these trials that we found alarming then. We still find it alarming for new reasons. Here's what that is. Now, remember, when they were doing trials, they basically looked to the Justice League. They try and find the superheroes out there in this country that can withstand anything because they want their trials to look good. So you can't be drinking any alcohol. You have to be really fit. You have to be eating good food. You have to take a whole questionnaire said only our best and brightest are in the trials. Doesn't matter that people with diabetes and autoimmune disease and cancer will be told to get it, and we won't know how it's going to affect them. We're going to give it to our healthiest and see how they do. Well, there was a very curious part of this trial that we have never seen. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. Maybe it's hidden somewhere, but we had never seen this in looking at the other trials that were going on. And this was that curious section. It said, as far as the participants, male participant reproductive inclusion criteria. Male participants are eligible to participate if they agree to the following requirements during the intervention period and for at least 28 days after the last dose of study intervention, which corresponds to the time needed to eliminate, I want you to focus on this, folks, to eliminate reproductive safety risk of the study interventions. We want to eliminate a reproductive safety risk of the study interventions. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to refrain from donating sperm if you're in this trial. We're afraid, for some reason we're not telling you, that your sperm may be corrupted by this vaccine trial. Plus, either be abstinent from heterosexual intercourse with a female of childbearing potential as their preferred and usual lifestyle, and agree to remain abstinent. That was all a part of this trial. Never saw that before. What were they concerned about with the sperm when it came to this vaccine? I thought you were telling us it was just going to stay in the arm and you know, wouldn't go anywhere and that we would create antibodies. They also had a section similar for women. Female participant reproductive inclusion criteria. Female participant is eligible to participate if she is not pregnant or breastfeeding, and at least one of the following conditions applies. Remember, we don't want you if you're pregnant. We don't want you if you're breastfeeding. We think there may be a problem there. We're worried about it. And is not a woman of childbearing potential. So meaning, or is a woman of childbearing, meaning if you're sterile, okay, then you're okay. If you're past the ability to have children, you're okay. Or if you are a woman of childbearing potential and you need to be using an acceptable contraceptive method as described below during the intervention period for a minimum of 28 days after the last dose of the study intervention. The investigator should evaluate the effectiveness of the contraceptive method in relationship to the first dose of study intervention. All right, so obviously, they don't want anyone getting pregnant. We're really worried about the sperm of men that are in this trial. We're really worried about women getting pregnant, so you are not allowed to get pregnant if you're in our trial, right? Well, we've never seen that. What was their concern? This is what our concern is. What was your concern? But here's what's really troubling. Remember, that is the criteria of the trial. They're running along in the trial, and then literally about 2 to 3 weeks after the majority of them all get a second dose, they promise to not get pregnant, they promise to not give their sperm or share it anywhere, and then all of a sudden, instead of finishing out that 2-year trial, where we might see what they meant, and even those that accidentally did get pregnant, let's see what happens with them, they bail out. And then when they bail out, they give the vaccine and recommend it to everybody in the world. Without what? Without any recommendation that you not go to a sperm bank, that you not have intercourse or deliver your sperm, you know, through, you know, for you homeschoolers out there, I'll leave it to your imagination. but for 28 days after the second shot. They don't tell the regular public that. They don't tell them don't get pregnant, you know, while you're getting this vaccine. They don't tell them that. Why? What was it they were, and here's the advertiser, protect yourself and your baby from COVID-19, get vaccinated. What was it they were so concerned about in the trials that even before they did the trials, and by the way, didn't study this problem they had because they kept all the pregnant women out, that made them perfectly happy to just give it to every pregnant woman out there? Well, that's how these studies were done. I can't answer that for you. We are looking into it. But here's what's troubling. We're now just nearly 2 years out from this vaccine. And there's a study that just came out of Germany by the German government itself. Fertility declines near the end of the COVID-19 pandemic. Evidence of the 2022 birth declines in Germany and Sweden. Okay, look what it says. The seasonally adjusted monthly total fertility rate of Germany dropped from 1.5 to 1.6 in 2021 to 1.3 to 1.4 in 2022, a decline of about 14%. There's no association of the fertility trends with changes in unemployment. We looked at it. Or infection rates. We looked at it. Or COVID-19 deaths. We looked at that. However, there is a strong association between the onset of vaccination programs and the fertility decline 9 months after of this onset. So this is what Germany's, this is what their government's saying. Like, we saw a really strange drop, and they put up a graph. Look at this graph, folks. Here we are going along, 2000, 2002. That's the fertility rate. Kind of really peaks there around 2016, slumps a little bit, 2018, 2020. Then all of a sudden, boom, 9 months. 9 months after we tell the pregnant women, go out and get vaccinated, boom, fertility crashes. It crashes right there. Yeah, that is alarming, especially since you seem to be upset or concerned in the middle of the vaccine trials, and then you didn't share that concern with all the innocent people that were turned basically into lab rats around the world. Well, this is our conversation now. And though, and we're in a difficult position now, right? Because they erased the group. They erased the control group in these trials, right? As soon as they had an EUA, they told us, the public, get this. I mean, this is how insidious this whole thing is, right? Well, yes, we had a saline placebo group, but now that we have this great vaccine that's 95% effective at stopping transmission, not, but lying about it, it just doesn't seem right to have this placebo group stuck as the placebo group for the next 2 years so we can continue to evaluate the success and health of this vaccine. We want to offer the vaccine because it's 95% effective at stopping transmission, not to those people, and they did it. They erased our control group. So now we are left with anecdotal stories around the world, trying to figure out what's happening in the world where they're all getting a vaccine, and no one is telling them there's a problem out there. So we are left as journalists, those of us bold enough to look, those doctors and scientists and nurses that are bold enough to see what they're seeing with their own eyes, we're left with those stories. And that is what we're going to talk about today, because those stories are starting to pop up all over the country, and they look like this.
I can definitely say since the vaccine rollout started, we have seen in our practice a decrease in new OB numbers, which would be infertility, by about 50%. We've also seen an increase in miscarriage rate by about 50%. And I would say there's probably about a 25% increase in abnormal pap smears, as well as cervical malignancies in our area.
Miscarriage is increased by a massive number. Fetal malformation, a specific fetal malformation, cystic hygroma, fetal cardiac abnormalities, fetal cardiac arrhythmias, fetal cardiac malformations, fetal cardiac arrest.
23 of my cohort got vaccinated. And in those months from September to March, 17 of those 23 subsequently miscarried.
Oh, for goodness sake.
There's a signal here as far as I'm concerned. And it seems that if you achieve a pregnancy in the, you know, one or two cycles since vaccination, you might end up running into trouble because we've got an inflammatory surface that the embryo is trying to implant in.
Severe placental problems causing intrauterine growth restriction, severely unable to grow fetuses, a significant increase, and this is all compared with appropriate controls.
We know that you can have a regular menstruation after this. We know that ACE receptors are all through the reproductive tract. We know the ovaries are at least a source of concentration for the nanoparticle carrier for the vaccine. Do these impact on ovarian function? I don't know. What am I doing trying to help these people get pregnant when nearly half of them are miscarrying? There's something not right.
Well, you know, it takes a lot for doctors to step forward and point out issues like this. As we've seen and as everyone knows, it's not lost on them that there will be attacks from the hospital systems that are promoting these products, from mandates coming down from bureaucrats like Tony Fauci inside of our government. We're losing track of the doctor-patient relationship here. It's being destroyed. It's a very, very scary time for medicine and science. It's why it's always an honor to get to talk to one of these doctors that is brave enough to talk about what they're seeing. And today is my honor and pleasure to be joined by Dr. James Thorpe. Dr. Thorpe, over the last year, you've been becoming increasingly more vocal on this issue of fertility, on miscarriages, on the rise in menstrual bleeding, which they're now even admitting is a side effect of this vaccine. So to begin with, what is your background? What is it in your career that you feel like you have a credible voice in this conversation?
Well, Dell, first, thank you very much for your incredible work, your incredible platform. ICAM, Aaron, Siri, Jeffrey, you guys are just doing amazing work. And I really appreciated your segment and your focus on my patients. And I'm speaking for my patients, all of them. I'm very happy to hear and see Senator Ron Johnson on your program. And he's my favorite politician, and I love him, and I vote. I want him focus. Yeah. I love to see him focus. He's the only politician in the United States of America that has focused on my patients, pregnant patients, and preborn babies. And you know, not so much with Dr. Ladapo and Dr. DeSantis, Governor DeSantis. Yeah, he's not a doctor. And I'm not for sure where Dr. Ladapo was during his OB rotation, but I just want to remind him that all the children, and I applaud you guys in Florida, I'm in Florida, you're doing or recommending strongly bashing the vaccine in children should never have been given. I want to remind you this though, Dr. Ladapo, Governor DeSantis, your children start in the womb, and the greatest and most egregious violation of medical ethics is not pushing the vaccine in children. It's pushing the vaccine in my patients, my pregnant women. It's the greatest, most egregious violation in ethics in the entire history of medicine. And nobody will focus on it except Senator Ron Johnson and yourself. Thank you so much. What is my background? I'm an old dog. I'm 69 years old. I have been doing high-risk obstetrics for 43 years. I'm extremely busy. I am very well credentialed to speak on this. I have, focused my entire career on my high-risk patients, and just to define those women of reproductive age, my pregnant women, my preborn babies, and my newborn babies. I am speaking for my preborn babies who don't have a voice. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to my OBGYN colleagues, 25,000 of you who apparently don't have a voice, and you've been illegally silenced by a gag order just 1 year ago by all the boards and by the Federation of State Medical Boards, the American Board of OBGYN, the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine, the American College of OBGYN. So for those patients out there, you really can't trust any doctor or nurse anywhere in the United States of America. We're all under a gag order. And if they want to collect their bribe paycheck, then the only way they can do it is by following orders. So my credentials speak for themselves. I'm extensively published. I was asked to by the Bush administration and after the turn of the century to provide my expertise in the Senate, the United States Senate, for my expertise for in utero fetal therapy. I served on the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine Board of Director. I've even served in the American Board of OBGYN. I have 200 plus publications, probably got 20 or more publications, including an upcoming book, just in the last 2 years, mostly focused on COVID. So, and if that weren't enough, I just had to turn in my my credentials to reapply for my credentials. Well, I have seen over 23,000 high-risk OB patients.
Wow.
Just in the last years. Just wow. In the last 3 years. So how many, thank you very much for this. And I really, really appreciate the focus on your whistleblower and Aaron Siri and ICANN. And hopefully we'll see our whistleblower coming up. But yeah. We need more of you, my OBGYN colleagues, 25,000 of you. Your primary responsibility is to uphold not your hospital, not the medical board's threat to gag you. It's to uphold your commitment, your moral responsibility to provide a physician-patient relationship with appropriate informed consent. You cannot give informed consent when you don't have any idea what's in the vaccine. And our CDC and FDA are corrupt, and they've admitted it. And they've admitted that they have not released the Pfizer 5.3.6 data, nor have they surrendered the V-safe data.
Well, look, obviously you, I mean, I don't think it's lost on anyone, the passion you have about this issue. It seems very serious just from your energy right now. So we're going to get into why you are so serious about this. This is a conversation that we first visited I remember it was Dr. Michael Yeadon had put out that he was questioning, you know, some of the issues with the sensitin, like this placental line, you know. And look, all of this was people guessing, scientists trying to look at things that might be happening. But we have more and more evidence coming in. Now, I just laid out what I thought was concerning about these trials in that they excluded pregnant women. And then as soon as they get an emergency use authorization, they even say we're worried about reproductive abilities. But then without, you know, you would have wanted pregnant women, unfortunately, in the trial, risking their pregnancies so we could see what happens. They avoid doing that, but then they recommend it to every woman as though they've done a trial saying it's safe. So they protect their trial participants, but they don't protect the world. I mean, I'm assuming you were looking at that moment, too. What were your thoughts on how they were approaching the science around this vaccine?
I was just totally distraught. Your points that you made earlier on, before I came on, you know, I designed the trial in August, September of 2020. This is what I do. I've done clinical research my whole life. I designed an appropriate randomized double-blinded placebo-controlled trial that should have been used by the medical industrial complex and pharma. And it was a very simple trial. It was randomized. It was double-blinded. And I had planned that, and I published it on social media to then President Trump and Fauci and Gates. Didn't hear a word from them. But had we done that study, I based that study, a power analysis, on I alleged that I wanted to study 0 to 5-fold increase in deaths from 1 in 100,000 to 5 in 100,000 after 10 years. Would have taken me 70,000 patients, 30,000 in each arm, 35,000.
Okay.
And had we done that study, 1 year afterward, the interim analysis definitely would have shown a dramatic increase in mortality and morbidity, as was evidenced by the VAERS database. But as you suggested before, they have basically contaminated all of the placebo groups. So that can never be done.
Right. Okay, so let's get to where we're at now. I know there's a huge journey, as I've had and you've had, over the last year and a half, nearly 2 years, watching this vaccine. Obviously, your area of expertise is in problematic pregnancies. So you look at, you know, all sorts of ultrasounds and things. I imagine not just of your own patients, but from around the country and around the world, people will look to your expertise to look at these things. So let's get into, I know you have, you know, a preprint study you're working on right now. What is it? I'm going to let you take it from here. What is it, my audience, and many in our audience are younger, right? We're watching this generation coming out of college, very confused by what just happened, this pandemic. People going, you know, is it okay? Should I get vaccinated? The doctors, I can't believe doctors are telling their patients, if you're going to get pregnant, you need to get the vaccine. If you are already pregnant, get the vaccine. Are you seeing a difference in your work? After this vaccine program has ramped up in pregnant women?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been absolutely horrible. Like I said, 23,000 high-risk OBs, you know, just scans that I've seen in the last high-risk obstetrical ultrasound images of fetuses in the womb, God's children, just over the last 3 years. I did not see significant fetal loss rates in my central part of the United States of America. I didn't see it in my practice. And by the way, the numbers on the graph that we discussed and I provided for you, you'll look at a very stable rate of fetal death rate. And so the blue line is the vital statistics of North America. You know, 40 years ago, you know, the stillbirth rate was probably about 10 per thousand. And over my career over the last, you know, 45 years, it's dropped to like 5.8 or thereabouts.
Really?
Per thousand births.
Okay.
And that's due to a variety of reasons. But when I aggregate those 3 years, 2017, 2018, and 2019, and I compare them with 2020, a really interesting thing happens. When in 2020, when COVID-19 was rampant, the national fetal death rates decreased. Not statistically significant, say from 5.85 to 5.75, thereabouts. There you go,
okay.
5.74.
Go. Okay, yep.
There you go. So this is what I want to show you here, that it's very important that we understand that COVID-19 does not cause a problem with fetal death. Doesn't cause a problem. And the other thing that I would like to point out is that, what did I first notice? Well, you know, listen, you talked a lot about ivermectin, and ivermectin is a miracle drug. But I don't want to leave my other miracle drug out, hydroxychloroquine.
Right.
You know, my beautiful bride, Maggie, who's an attorney, and we write and work together. We published a paper just last week in America Out Loud with Malcolm. And my beautiful bride found, see, this is great, from the CDC and the FDA, it had to be 5 years ago or maybe 10 years ago, pushing hydroxychloroquine, how safe it is. It's so safe in pregnancy. First trimester, breastfeeding moms, use it in your children over in Africa, pushing it. And that's been my experience. I have used hydroxychloroquine for over 40 years, 43 years. OBGYN docs, rheumatology docs, internal medicine docs,
yeah,
family practice docs. Patients that have autoimmune disease are put on hydroxychloroquine. When they get pregnant, they're not even taken off in the first trimester. Never had a problem with it. It's safer than aspirin. It's safer than Tylenol. And what happened? The fraudulent medical industrial complex bashed it, just like they bashed ivermectin. And they did it very unethically. They published, they bought off the Lancet, and they bought off the lead cardiovascular surgeon at Harvard that published it completely fraudulent. They didn't even alter the data. It was completely fraudulent. And that was in May of 2020. So it completely destroyed the credibility. No physicians would feel comfortable with it. No pharmacists would feel comfortable with it, with this massive disinformation campaign.
All right, let me just take the opportunity. Hold on one second. I just want to take an opportunity because I'm just hearing from my science team here to make it clear that if you are pregnant, you can't take ivermectin. I just held up ivermectin that I, you know, had purchased for my family. But if you're pregnant, hydroxychloroquine is safe during pregnancies, has been rated as safe. Ivermectin is not. So I want to make sure that we get that across. All right, obviously there's been a huge and what talks I give out there. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I just want to correct you. No, I'm not in agreement with you saying ivermectin is unsafe in pregnancy.
Okay.
I think it's safe in pregnancy. I just would not prescribe it in the first trimester just simply because we don't have anywhere near as much experience as I do with hydroxychloroquine. I think that ivermectin is fine in pregnancy.
Okay. All right, so let's get back to what we are seeing then. You're saying in your direct practice, you're not really seeing, there's a concern about miscarriage, things like that, but you've been very outspoken. So what are you outspoken about and why?
Okay, I am very concerned about all the complications. I'm especially concerned about my patients because we have never, ever used any kind of investigational drugs in pregnancy. It's an absolute contraindication. It's been a golden rule of all humanity. Don't have to be a doctor to realize that. So I've been focused on VAERS. I've been focused on my colleagues all over the world. I've talked to colleagues and research groups on every continent and I'm actively involved with them. I've seen just dramatic death and destruction and carnage from this vaccine in my women of reproductive age, especially my pregnant women. Listen, the fraudulent article from the New England Journal of Medicine that was published last year, June of 2021, pushing the vaccine in pregnancy. It is a completely fraudulent article. They alleged that there was a miscarriage rate on par with the population of 13% because they lied. They underhandedly took 700 patients that never got the vaccine in the first trimester. They got it in the third trimester. Mm. It's impossible to have a miscarriage in the third trimester. They falsely, fraudulently shifted those 700 patients from the third trimester to the first trimester and decrease the miscarriage rate from 82%.
And when you say impossible to have a miscarriage in third trimester, that's because it wouldn't be called a miscarriage, correct? I mean, you know, it has a different definition, early delivery or something like that.
And I truly believe that if you look at their data, clearly those patients that got it in the first trimester had an 82% miscarriage rate. It's in their own data. But when they push it there, it's just like it's written in Holy Scripture if it's published in the corrupt New England fraudulent Journal of Medicine, like all of the other flagship journals of the medical industrial complex. So it's very, very disconcerting that the FDA is corrupt. Most of the medical journals are corrupt. Most of the hospital systems are corrupt. You know, I listened to Senator Ron Johnson complain about, millions of dollars that have been used to discredit him, okay? And you know, he's a strong, I love him. He's a valiant warrior. How about not tens of millions, not hundreds of millions, but how about tens of billions of dollars that were spent from the Department of Health and Human Services, funneled through the COVID-19 Coalition Corps, funneled into every sector of our society, including the medical boards, who are completely corrupt. And every single sector of our society.
I know. Well, look, we talk about that all the time on this show. And so for pregnant women that are watching right now, what would you say to them about this vaccine? Is there a risk? Is there something we can see? Because obviously we don't have trials we can trust. There's no placebo group anymore. Everything's been rushed out. So we're left with, you know, the real world data that's coming in. So as a real world physician, what is it you're seeing that you think that we should know about?
Well, first of all, I'll just harken back to my incredible clinical experience, highly, very, very busy clinical experience. I can tell you that after the vaccine rolled out, our fetal deaths, stillbirths, significantly increased. Yes, the miscarriages probably increased too, but the reason why I don't focus on those deaths is because there's such a variance in the risk of miscarriage depending on the gestational age.
What's the difference between a fetal death and a miscarriage for people that are out there? Because I think we would equate them as being the exact same thing.
They're not. They are to the lay people, but a miscarriage by definition cannot occur at 20 weeks. At 19 weeks and 6 days, it's a miscarriage. At 20 weeks and 0 days, it's a fetal death. And it might not make any sense to you, but that's our definition. We have to pick a cutoff somewhere.
Okay.
But if you take a miscarriage at, say, like 4 weeks, that the chance of a normal pregnancy miscarrying at 4 or 6 weeks is extremely high.
Okay.
But after you pass 12 weeks, it's extremely rare. And as you get up to 19 weeks, it's very, very rare to lose a pregnancy at 19 weeks, but it would be called a miscarriage.
So you're seeing that. What you're saying is it'd be very hard under natural circumstances to see a shift in miscarriage because honestly, if the seed hasn't found correct purchase, it doesn't make it through the process, you know, so that's happening a lot. But once the process is along, we're fertilized, we're moving, we're past 19 weeks, going to 20 weeks, there we really expect more stability than you're seeing. And now you're seeing an incredible rise there of women losing their babies after that 20-week period is what you're saying.
That's exactly right. And what you'll see with the whistleblower data, the data from California, you see the practice that I'm in as a maternal fetal medicine specialist, there we go. We can talk about that, right?
Please do. Yep.
But understand that California and maybe some other parts of the country, but maybe mostly California and Washington have the highest vax rates in the country.
Right.
And so I would guess, and I'm just guessing, that probably 80 to 90% of pregnant women are vaccinated in California. In Canada, it's even higher. But I would say that in Florida is probably on par with my Midwest practice. And the vaccination rate is much lower. I'm guessing, because I'm not allowed to look and do clinical work through surveys and through the clinical records that I would usually do. Otherwise, I'll get fired. So we don't have the ability to do a formal study, but that doesn't stop me from observing. My guess is that our fetal death rates are much lower. They're much higher from the vaccine. I would guess they're probably double the national rate, probably in Florida, maybe a little bit more than double. Same with the Midwest. But as you'll see with this data from California that you can put up, it's frightening. Okay, here we go. So I think we're going to have Miss Michelle on. She comes in, she'll tell you the story. But this is data from a nursing administrative supervisor that runs two hospitals in a pretty moderate-sized California city. I won't mention it, nor will I mention the hospital's name. But they do about 9,000 deliveries a year. So, and again, from this data we talked about, COVID-19 was not causing any stillbirths in 2020.
Right.
But then in 2021, this nursing supervisor of Women's Services sent an email to all the nurses in her department stating this data that I plotted out and saying that in August, July of 2021, they had the peak ever, 22 dead babies, stillbirths. And then in August of this year, the same record was achieved. So it's stunning. And let me go through the metrics with you a little bit, Del. I don't want to get too sophisticated here, but if you look at that line and you look at the y-axis, you think about how tight that blue line is. If you know, you've all seen the normograms where there's a dotted line above and below that main line that represents a 95% confidence interval. that 95% confidence interval is plus or minus 2 standard deviations. A standard deviation on this graph is probably, my experts tell me, it's 0.5 fetal death or stillbirth per 1,000. Now, you do the metrics. On the numbers that they gave me, their stillbirth rate is 29.3 in July of 2021 and August of 2022. It's designated by the triangle, the red triangle.
Wow.
Just
so we're up from 5.74 to, you know, 29.3 potentially. I mean, that's incredible. So let's, because you've been talking about it, let's go ahead. You have introduced us to a new whistleblower, as you will, that is starting to speak out. This is Michelle Gershman joins me now. Michelle, what is your area of expertise? My understanding is you're a nurse, so just tell me a little bit about your career.
Oh, and I'm honored to be here on this show.
Thank you
nice
for
to
coming.
Meet you.
Absolutely.
You're welcome. So I work at a trauma center, a large hospital in Central California, and I'm a postpartum nurse. So I take care of babies when they're about 2 hours old. They come to my floor and I help assist them, make sure everything is progressing well so that they can go home with their mothers, you know, after 24 hours or so. And I've worked there for 2 years. So, you know, during COVID, before the vaccines, moms were delivering their babies and the babies seemed pretty healthy in general and the moms also. And then, you know, they'd go home. So in March of 2021, it was about 2 months after the vaccines really started to roll out. I noticed that in the NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit, where they have the babies that may have some health issues, you know, on any day, it used to always have about 50 babies in there. And all of a sudden in March 2021, there were 80 babies in the NICU. So that's a very high number for the NICU. And then in April of 2021, I started noticing that there were fetal demises on the board in labor and delivery. A fetal demise is a baby that passed away in utero, but they're usually full term. So, you know, anywhere from 32 weeks to 40 weeks even is considered full term. 37 weeks or above is considered full term, but these babies were, you know, 32, 33 weeks, and then they'd have a fetal demise. And I would look on their charts when I could. It's kind of hard to get access to charts, but, you know, if the patient came to me, of course I can check. And I was noticing that a lot of these mothers had received the vaccine. And a lot of times they had received it like 1 week before, and then they went into labor and they delivered a baby that either passed away already or they had to go to NICU because they were too early to survive outside the womb without help. So I was just noticing this. I really was paying attention. I was blown away by what I was seeing, the health problems that all of a sudden we're seeing in the mothers. Before I worked on postpartum, I was working on the cardiac floor. And so I saw a lot of heart issues all the time. This is before the vaccine, kidney issues, respiratory issues. And so I was so happy to go to the baby floor because people are healthier there. And then in April and May of 2021, I felt like, oh my God, I'm back on the cardiac floor because this is ridiculous. Like how much extra work you're doing helping these mothers. And I'm not complaining about doing the extra work, but I'm blown away because this is not natural. This shouldn't be happening. And so, I was getting really frustrated with work because
let
of
me
all
just,
these
just
new
very
health.
Very quickly, let me just ask you a question so I fully understand what you're suggesting. That the NICU's exploding is nearly double the amount of babies that are going in there. You're seeing what appears to be sort of a rise in fetal demise, and you're also saying that what you're seeing is women giving birth early. They're not going full term, really. They're delivering a lot more than usual around 30, 32 weeks. Is that what you did? Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
And when you looked at the charts, you're seeing that many of these that are having an early birth, earlier than usual, had just recently, many of them, gotten the COVID vaccine.
Yes, that's correct.
So, and I recognize this is just anecdotal evidence. I know you're not necessarily making any accusations, and I think we should make that clear, but it is something that you're observing and are questioning. Why, you know, is there a real connection here? Because suddenly we see a rise in this early, you know, birth rate, and we're seeing this vaccine being given right before then.
Correct. This is based on observations. You know, I've just really been keeping my eyes open. Since that shot rolled out, I had a bad feeling about it. And so I've just been keeping my eyes open. When I've talked to other nurses around me, they have not been paying attention, it seems like, not like I have. Some of them have said all these health problems are coming from something in the water or pesticides. And they're just kind of oblivious to the fact that it could possibly be this new experimental drug.
Right. Okay. Yes. So let me bring Dr. Thorpe back in here if we can. As you know, obviously, you know, you're working with whistleblowers, as are we. When you heard this story, did this seem like it was out of the ordinary from what you've heard from other doctors behind the scenes, Dr. Thorpe, or other nurses? Is this an anomaly happening in the hospital?
Well, yeah, it's a huge anomaly. It's a 40 sigma event. It's a 40 standard deviation more above the baseline of that 5.8 per thousand stillbirths that it should be having. But yes, absolutely. I've heard the same story all over the world, and I've seen it with my own eyes. As I suggested before, the danger signals in the field deaths and the problems are going to be more attenuated in the Midwest of this country, where I practice, in Florida, where I practice, because I don't think 90% of our patients are getting the vaccine like they do in Michelle's area,
right?
And even more so in Canada. But I've seen the exact same thing. I have three very similar slides, and I don't know that we'll have time to show them, but I have got whistleblower data from communities up in Canada, and they're worse.
Wow.
Look at this. This is a fetal stillbirth rate, it's Ontario, Canada, region number one. And look at that stillbirth rate, 41.5. Okay, it was only 29 in mid-California. And I'm guessing in my practice, probably it's only about 10. But this is probably all the patients are getting vaccinated, or nearly all of them. Here's number two, region number two. Same thing, we're looking, look at the x-axis now, that's a 59.4. You're looking at, that's, you know, remember, keep in mind, a standard deviation is only 0.5 per thousand. So you're looking at 50 or 60 sigma here. I mean, this cannot occur by chance alone. It's unprecedented in these locations. And from my whistleblowers in Canada, these come from multiple different care providers giving me the same numbers. Unfortunately, of interest, the Canadian government, to the best of my ability, stopped reporting in mid-2021.
Oh, my God.
And the hospitals are hiding the data, and they're hiding the data here, too. Everybody is throwing my patients under the bus, throwing my vaccine injured under the bus, and denying that there's a problem with the vaccine or the experimental gene therapy.
Michelle, thank you, Dr. Thorpe. Michelle, so you described leaving sort of the cardiac floor and you went to the neonatal floor, right? And so
postpartum,
you're there,
yes.
Postpartum. What would be the normal rate? I mean, obviously we can talk big rates and worldwide, but just inside of your hospital, in your experience, prior to the COVID vaccine and this timing and this change you're seeing, what would be the average rate of, you know, stillborn fetal demise on your floor?
I'm glad you asked. When I started working there in November 2020, there used to be one or two every 2 or 3 months. Maybe.
Okay. Maybe.
And then since March of 2021, April 2021, I started to notice more and more that when I would check the labor and delivery board, there were one or two, each week or so.
Wow.
So it's okay. Pretty big increase.
All right. So folks out there, you know, there's one thing, and these are obviously anecdotal stories. It's all we have because the proper science hasn't been done. CDC and FDA, I am in total agreement with Dr. Thorpe, is corrupt. They've been promoting a vaccine that has been properly tested on our babies, on our children, and maybe most egregiously on the developing fetuses inside of pregnant women. But again, we could just say, well, this is just opinion, or this is just Michelle's opinion. Today, she has bravely released to us an internal document, an email from that hospital system that was sent out to those working there. I'm going to share this with you now. I want to, first of all, say that this is not her opinion now any longer. This is the perspective of the hospital itself. I'm not sure what they're going to say about us showing this, but I want to say that Michelle, we had a very deep conversations beforehand, and she feels it's necessary for people to see this. So we're going to bring up this email right now. This went out to the staff. Good evening, everyone. Well, it seems as though the increase of demise patients that we are seeing is going to continue. There were 22 demises in August, which ties the record number of demises in July 2021. And so far in September, there have been 7, and it's only the 8th day of the month. Now these statistics include redacted, so you haven't seen all of them. And some have also gone through the EDs and ORs, but there have still been so many in our department. It's a lot of work for you as the bedside RNs, and it's also a lot of work for me. Demises have taken a lot of my time away from the other groups of patients that I serve, so I hope this trend doesn't continue indefinitely. Know of a few more that are scheduled to deliver in the week ahead, so unfortunately the process is going to be very familiar with all of you. Once again, I do so appreciate the time and attention that you give to the patients. When I follow up with them, they remember your names and the way you help them get through a very difficult time. That is the first time I have seen that email. We discussed beforehand. We're very busy putting the show together. I have to say, I feel like the oxygen has just been sucked out of my lungs. To read that from someone that is as objective, I guess, as you could get, working for the system itself, it now corroborates what you're seeing with your own eyes. And for anyone that was having a question anywhere around the world now, this is a shocking, shocking email. Were you shocked when you received it? How much, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't work for the first half of my shift. I was so distraught. I just kept thinking, why is nobody talking about this? The media should be outraged. We're talking about babies. You know, babies are given to us by God. They're here to bring us love and joy. And if somebody is taking that away from us, that's evil.
Dr. Thorpe, I know that you're aware of this email. I don't know that I've ever read anything as shocking as what I just read there.
Well, Del, you're absolutely right. I was just praying that you would stop and not read anymore, because the rest of the email, which I think is about twice as long as what you read, is really, really upsetting. It starts talking about stuff that I can't even talk about, that is not appropriate to talk about.
Okay, and we're going to leave that for courtrooms and other things to decide. I think we get the point here. And so let me ask you this, Michelle, in your practice, do you see doctors recommending, are there doctors recommending this vaccine, or do you think these pregnant women are just getting it on their own because of what they're seeing in the media?
I do believe that they are being coerced into taking this vaccine. One doctor would write in his notes when he'd take care of a mother who just delivered, he would put patient received COVID vaccine, or if they didn't, he would say patient did not receive vaccine, and then he would quote what they'd say. And if they didn't receive it, he would quote how he provided education on why it should be taken, why it's important. And so I do believe that he is coercing them when they come to see him in his office before they deliver. And so I think 90% of these mothers are getting the vaccine while they're pregnant.
Dr. Thorpe, do we forgive? I mean, I really grapple with this. When I started this conversation at the beginning of COVID, I was speaking all over the country and I would say, look, doctors don't know better. They're being lied to by the CDC. They're being lied to by the FDA. That's basically the clergy of this medical religion or orthodoxy. But man, at a certain point, I did a story on remdesivir where, you know, these wives of young husbands that are lost in hospitals are watching their husbands being put on dialysis because of kidney failure. And then when they ask how many of the patients on kidney failure, you know, dialysis right now got the COVID vaccine, and said all of them. And you start asking yourself, how is it these doctors are not seeing COVID doesn't cause kidney failure? So obviously this treatment you're using must be doing it. Why is it not registering in doctors' minds? In this case, this doctor is promoting a product, and probably many of them are because they're being told to do it. How is it they're not seeing this rise in demise of infants and fetuses?
I talk about four levels, hierarchical levels of cognitive dissonance, going from the individual physician to the individual's family, number two, number three to the individual's friends, and number four, finally, to the doctor's patients. And every single time you take the shot, the doctor takes the first one, crossed a line, and can't ever take it back. It's done. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and then they will lose their paycheck and get fired. So their paycheck is really a bribe. And I think that's something that has been promoted by Department of Health and Human Services through that CCC. All of these medical boards, the medical boards are all fraudulent. They're all contaminated. The American College of OBGYN, the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine, all of which I've been formally associated with, one way or the other, and they're more focused on changing the language to politically correct language than they really care about my patients. They don't really care about patients dying and injured from the jab. They care about their massive amount of profit that they get from pushing the vaccine. So I don't think that, you know, we had a discussion on this earlier. What was the motive of that email being released? What is the motive of the doctor that's pushing it? I think it's so difficult to know somebody's heart and judge them. I just can't do that. I want to stick with the facts that I know to be true. And I know for sure, beyond a shadow of a doubt, and I have data and proof that this vaccine is killing and injuring my patients. And it needs to stop now.
Michelle, you know, one of the issues, you know, obviously we're talking about how the fetus is affected. It's just reasonable to imagine you have a product that is an mRNA or a DNA technology, you know, messing the reproductive system. But one of the things that we've heard a lot about in non-pregnant people is, you know, blood clots and strokes and heart attacks and things like that. We're talking about babies. Have you seen any effect on the mothers themselves or any issues that went on when delivering that you think are outside the ordinary that of what you're used to witnessing?
Yes, I have a friend who's a crisis nurse at the same hospital that I work at, and she got the booster dose and didn't know she was pregnant. And then a week later, she started having blood clots. She had to have some surgeries done, and she delivered her baby early. And she admitted to everybody, she said, this is from the shot. If I didn't get that shot, my baby would have been fine. She is okay, thank God. And her baby's doing okay. He's a month old, but it's scary because they both almost lost their lives. And she knows that it happened right after getting that shot. So she doesn't feel comfortable speaking forward right now because, you know, she's taking care of her newborn baby. And I understand that, but that's just one. And then I've been taking care of moms who now have high blood pressure issues. And so they have to be on critical medications for that. There have been moms that have had blood clots. One mother had a stroke while she delivered her baby and she passed away. That was around Christmas last year. So we've been seeing all kinds of unusual stuff. And then same with the babies. They've had to do a lot of echocardiograms, which is where they check the baby's heart with an ultrasound because the babies are having arrhythmias. And then they're checking other things like spinal issues. And then there's no way to know what's going to happen to these babies as they grow up. This is only while they're newborns that we're seeing these unusual health problems. So definitely, I have seen an increase in health problems in the moms and the babies.
Dr. Thorpe, you look at a lot of ultrasounds and things. We have some images that you sent forward. Let me bring up a few of these and maybe you can explain some of the things that you're seeing here. What are we looking at here and why is this problematic? I don't know if you...
I want to make it real clear to you, Del, and our audience here. These are placentas that, and I get images from ultrasounds all over the country, and from what I call my Trojan horses that are all over the country, nurses and sonographers and OBs, and I won't mention the facilities and the names, and I review them a lot. It's been a kind of a consensus of that's the what a placenta will look like, the one that you just showed, about 8 weeks after a Pfizer exam, this one. The one on the left, that's a placenta. You see all the calcification. You see some of the dropout, the black areas. The white areas are calcification. It's just an abnormal placenta. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's a severe problem, but it's a almost, if you will, a surrogate that I've noticed as being associated with a vaccination, say 6 to 8 weeks earlier. Here's some more of the same. Now, this is interesting. This is a patient that got the Pfizer vax long ago, three of them, but this is a subsequent pregnancy and it's still there, which is a little bit concerning to me. This is all anecdotal data.
Right.
I can't make any conclusions off this.
Yeah.
But it's just a pattern, a kind of an instant pattern recognition that I picked up and other very experienced sonographers and doctors have picked up as well.
What would you say? I mean, Michelle, right now, obviously it takes a lot of courage to publicly talk about these things. I know it's not lost on you that many doctors and scientists around the world are being pressured as soon as they speak out. We don't know how your hospital is going to react to showing, this very important document. And I want to thank you so much because it really is important that we verify the truth. As I said to you beforehand, we're about transparency on the high wire, and we really like to show the evidence of what we're saying. And so I want to thank you for doing that. What is it you hope to accomplish by being here on the high wire? What would you like to see happen in the immediate and the future as it goes with delivering babies and your concern around this vaccine program?
Well, first of all, I would hope that pregnant women would not get the shot, but I do think that it might be too late. I think that many of them already have because they were all kind of coerced, when the shot came out. But since they already most likely got it, don't get another one. And I just hope that people gain their power back. I hope that people become more connected. I do kind of think that these shots have caused like a disconnect and that people have lost sense of humanity. And I say that because my mom was killed in November 2021. She was given remdesivir against her will, and I wasn't allowed to be there for her. I wasn't allowed to save her life. And the charge nurse told me, I know you're a nurse, but you need to wear a glove. Or I know that it's your mom, but you need to wear a glove when you're in this room. I was holding my mom's hand before she died. She said, you're a nurse and you know better. And so I said, what kind of nurse am I if I didn't even get the chance to save my own mother? So I want her to hear that. I think that what good is being a nurse if I can't save my own mother, if I can't save babies, if I'm just going to work just to get a paycheck? I don't want it. I don't need to be a nurse. I also used to complain to my mom before she died that I can't stand poking babies. I can't stand checking their blood sugars, poking them with needles, because these babies' bodies deserve respect. They should be handled with respect. They are baby humans, and mothers should be protective of them. They shouldn't let people come in and just poke them with things, poke them with needles, hurting them. It's not right. And so my mom said, don't quit. Those babies need you, and you're saving them. So my mom passed away, and I've thought about quitting multiple times because of all the carnage that I've been seeing. And when I think about quitting, I hear my mom say, don't quit. Those babies need you. You're saving them. You can take away my job. You can take away my nurse's license. But they shouldn't have killed my mother.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing both your eyewitness accounts and now this internal memo, because I believe you may have just taken the greatest step a person can take to save lives. I know for a fact, and I want to share this with you, as I travel the country and I walk through airports and restaurants, people come up to me and they said, you saved my baby's life. I didn't get a vaccine because of what you said there. I assure you, now millions of people that are watching this show and millions that will share your testimony here will be saved. And so I want to thank you for this brave and courageous moment for you. Dr. Thorpe, last words. I know there's so much we could talk about. You're deeply involved in this. I want to let you get back to that work. But as we watch this, you know, there's so much a part of us that just wants to say that cannot be possible. These are, you know, doctors are good people. Hospitals are there to heal people. You know, I just have a hard time believing this. You know, for those out there, and we should be skeptical, what do you want to say to the audience that maybe considering that they're pregnant or they're about to be pregnant, you know their doctors are telling them they should get the vaccine? What do you want them to think about?
Number one, the COVID-19 experimental gene therapy is absolutely contraindicated in pregnancy. Never take it. Number two, you're looking at the bravest woman in the entire world right now, one of my heroes, Michelle. And you know, Del, I'll say this, that, you know, I think you had Dr. Kimberly Biss on the clip. Okay, this is my opinion, but, you know, Dr. Kimberly Biss came out, I think, because of Michelle. And I would beg you, Del, to have your folks put up the whistleblower line, the email line, and I would beg my patriots, my doctors, my colleagues around the country, of which there's 25,000 OBGYNs, I would beg you to honor the physician-patient relationship. Don't worry about, you know, what other people or the board or your hospital thinks. Do the right thing for your patient. And please call me or call Dell. Go to that number. There's 100,000 nurses in postpartum nurses or labor and delivery nurses. I know that you've seen the carnage like Michelle. Please come out. Dell and Aaron Seary and Jeffrey will protect you.
They have it right now. Yep. So here is our whistleblower line, whistleblower at icandecide.org. I want to be clear. We have extensive conversations with people like Michelle to make sure she's ready to be public with the information that she's sharing. We have never, ever, I never will force anybody to present information before you're ready. If you want to begin that conversation to discuss, just simply get it off your chest and talk about what you're seeing and discuss whether or not you want to publicly state it. It also helps us do our investigation, know where to look, whistleblower at icandecide.org. And then we will take your information, you know, enlist people like Dr. Thorpe that know what to do with it or help us understand what it is we are looking at. Michelle, Dr. Thorpe is right. You are courageous and beautiful. And I think we all feel your heart and connection in this. And I know, and I've said it from the beginning, for those that said, you know, I can't work if I don't get this vaccine. I can't work if I tell the truth. Then I said, what kind of job is that? And I think that there's, for people that speak the truth and those around us that have been brave enough, there's been nothing but blessings. There's other blessings in this world that come from being a truthful and honest person. So I hope that this hospital actually stands behind what they sent in that email, recognizes that, you know, what you're doing is just trying to limit this carnage. It's unfortunate that they're having to accept this rise and say it looks like it's going to continue this way. Obviously, you're trying to stop that any way you can. So I hope that you were treated fairly, but know that we're here to support you. If you need any support in anything that's going on, if you need any legal help, we're also here to make that happen. Dr. Thorpe, you have been outspoken. You are a courageous doctor, and you know, putting it all on the line. So I want to thank you for taking the time today to join us.
Thank you, Dale.
All right. You both take care. I want to look at this email one more time because I don't want us to ever forget it. Remember, there is talking about evidence and then there's actually seeing it. I just want to read this opening line because it is so shocking. Well, it seems as though the increase of demised patients that we're seeing is going to continue. That is unacceptable. That should be unacceptable to every doctor, every OB, every surgeon, every human being on this planet. If it's not unacceptable to you, check in with yourself. It is time to, you know, wake up. We all need to wake up. We got to get to the truth, and we need your help.